Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I am Danielle Joffe. I am appellate counsel for Mr. Osborne. Mr. Osborne was convicted of first-degree assault and sentenced to 17 years and appeals that conviction. I'm addressing one issue today, and that is the fact that the trial court did not sua sponte provide a jury instruction for heat of passion. In this case, we believe that the evidence that Mr. Salazar had previously beat up Mr. Osborne was established clearly for the jury, that Mr. Salazar brought an axe handle with him the day of the confrontation that led to Mr. Osborne's arrest was established by the testimony of Mr. Osborne. Mr. Osborne testified that he took the axe handle away from Mr. Salazar, but here's where the evidence is crucial. The evidence was that Mr. Salazar was hit on the back of the legs. Mr. Salazar was not hit in the front of the legs. Mr. Salazar was hit upside the head. These actions could very easily lead a jury to determine that Mr. Salazar was trying to leave the event while Mr. Osborne was still striking out at Mr. Salazar. Thus, a heat of passion instruction that Mr. Salazar had been the provoking cause of the event and that Mr. Osborne was overreacting, is clear. That Mr. Osborne was engaged in self-defense is something the jury could reasonably have rejected because Mr. Salazar was hit in the back. It's our position that trial counsel either failed to request out of trial strategy or failed to request, more likely out of ineffective assistance. And this instruction is an instruction that would have been crucial for the jury to receive to render judgment in this case. It is, a criminal case is not a game. In People v. Bennett, 771 Northeast 2nd, 533 at 536, Illinois Court of Appeals, the court says, a criminal trial is not a game to win or lose, but a search for the truth and justice. And that's what should have been done in this case. The California courts routinely require that a jury be instructed as to all viable lesser included offenses.
Ms. Jaffa, what was the highly provoking act that occurred here that would have caused Mr. Osborne to react in a sudden heat of passion?
Assuming the jury believed Mr. Osborne's testimony, the provoking act would have been the fact that, having already been beaten up once by Mr. Salazar, Mr. Salazar then, my client came and approached Mr. Salazar at the trash truck. Mr. Salazar pulled an axe handle and started swinging it at my client. My client took it away from him and started swinging back at Mr. Salazar. So Mr. Salazar, having already beaten up my client on one occasion, my client already being oversensitive to Mr. Salazar, then overreacted by taking the axe handle and hitting Mr. Salazar, even though Mr. Salazar turned away from the event after Mr. Salazar had initiated a fight by swinging an axe handle at Mr. Osborne. So it's Mr. Salazar's grabbing the axe handle and swinging it at Mr. Osborne that we believe was the provoking action.
Ms. Joffe, let me ask you this. The defendant admitted to confronting Mr. Salazar. And so in that instance, is heat of passion available when the defendant is the initial confronter? And this is at the trash truck.
He confronted Mr. Salazar, but without a weapon. He confronted Mr. Salazar verbally, but he wasn't threatening Mr. Salazar. And if Mr. Osborne had a weapon with him or had started striking Mr. Salazar, then heat of passion would probably not be a viable option. But in this case, he simply confronted him face to face, not with any intention of attacking him physically, but wanting to confront him in light of the assault that Mr. Salazar had imposed or had engaged in against Mr. Osborne 3 nights earlier. So I'd argue that yes, Mr. Osborne's actions in confronting Mr. Salazar was not an act that would negate heat of passion. It was Mr. Salazar's response to Mr. Osborne's coming up to talk with him, perhaps in an angry fashion. It was Mr. Salazar's response by grabbing a weapon that was the provoking act. And then Mr. Salazar striking Mr. Osborne with the weapon. And in this case, because there was substantial conflicting evidence, this wasn't a case where it was a narrow hint of possible provocation, but Mr. Osborne's testimony was clear that Mr. Salazar had struck at him with the axe handle, that it's clear heat of passion was a viable lesser included offense, and heat of passion was an appropriate instruction and one that should have been given by the judge in a case where the evidence is so conflicting, but where there is substantial evidence supporting Mr. Osborne's position. Further, I would like to add an argument, and that is just that the people will not be prejudiced by a remand either for new trial or resentencing under the F5 assault in the first degree heat of passion, because the people's interest in the case is to seek justice. And overcharging or overconvicting a defendant is not justice. Mr. Osborne should not be spending 17 years in prison when he committed a crime that was less serious than the only crime the jury had the option of voting for that fit the facts of the case. The jury did not know of provocation, so they couldn't rule on provocation. Had the jury had the option to rule on provocation, they may well have come back with a heat of passion verdict. And so we're asking that the matter be remanded either for a new trial or in the alternative that Mr. Osborne be sentenced under heat of passion. And with that, I have no further argument and would like to hold the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Jaffa.
May it please the court, my name is Jillian Price, registration number 40815, and I represent the people. Neither the facts nor the law support Mr. Osborne's claims, and both must fail. First, with respect to the alleged, with respect to the alleged instructional error, it was not error, let alone plain error, for the trial court to fail to sua sponte instruct the jury on heat of passion. Mr. Osborne concedes that he did not request an instruction on heat of passion. And there is no law in the state of Colorado, no statute, no well-settled legal principle that requires a trial court to instruct where the defendant has not requested an instruction. Indeed, for an error to be plain, the trial court's action must contravene a statute, a well-settled principle of law, or Colorado case law. In this case, the trial court's actions did none of those things. And in fact, Colorado law, this court particularly, has twice held that it is not error and therefore not plain error when a trial court does not instruct on heat of passion where, as here, the defendant has not requested heat of passion.
And here, as I understand it, Mr. Osborne got a self-defense instruction.
He did. And that's at page 153 of the court file is where that instruction appears. There was some discussion over the language in that instruction, but otherwise it was requested and given, and Mr. Osborne has not challenged either the giving of the self-defense instruction or the language of that instruction on appeal. And the jury was able to consider that.
So, Ms. Price, if I understand your argument is it would not be plain error because the error would not be obvious because there was no statute or case law that would indicate to the trial court that not giving the instruction would be error.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And under these circumstances, and this is a plain error review claim, under these circumstances where the error is not obvious, where it does not contravene law, the statute, legal principles, or Colorado case law, there can be no plain error, and this claim must fail for those reasons. Unless this court has any further questions on the alleged instructional error or on the serious bodily injury issue, the people would rest on their briefs and request that this court affirm.
I do have one more question.
Absolutely.
Would the evidence support a heat of passion instruction had it been requested?
Had it been requested and had Mr. Osborne's testimony been believed, that would have that would likely have satisfied the scintilla of evidence standard that would be required for that affirmative defense. However, the case law in Colorado is clear that that scintilla standard must be met as well as a request for that instruction. Both of those things must be met, and the instruction was not requested here.
All right, and let me ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel, is if a defendant is the one who initiates the confrontation, is heat of passion available as a defense?
The people would assert that it would not be. Heat of passion is premised on a startling event where the defendant himself causes that startling event. I think that would negate the availability of a heat of passion instruction.
Okay, thank you.
Well, again, unless this court has any further questions on any of the issues raised, the people would request that this court affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Price.
Thank you.
And I would disagree with the people's position. I believe that the definition of assault, heat of passion, under 18.3.302, caused by a serious and highly provoking act of the intended victim, affecting the person, causing injuries sufficiently to excite an irresistible passion in a reasonable person, and without an interval between the provocation and the injury, sufficient for the voice of humanity to be heard. So in this case, although Mr. Osborne confronted Mr. Salazar, he was not doing it armed with a weapon. Mr. Salazar escalated the event by taking a weapon and striking out at Mr. Osborne. That then becomes the provoking act. The taking of the weapon becomes the provoking act, which creates the event that Mr. Osborne was reacting to when he struck at Mr. Salazar. And if there are no further questions, I would rest on my briefs.
Thank you, Ms. Jaffa. Thank you again, Ms. Price. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.